Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Your Everyday Cyber Podcast with Limor Kesem and Diana Kelly. We live in a cyberspace almost all the time, but do we know enough about living in it securely? Join this dynamic duo as they take you through an exploration of daily cyber activities and how you can make better choices to make them secure for yourself and your family. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Welcome to Your Everyday Cyber. I'm Limor Kesem, a threat intelligence professional and cybersecurity advisor to some of the largest corporations in the world. Also, one toddler's mom. My co-host is Diana Kelly, a cybersecurity expert who is the CTO and co-founder of Security Curve. Well, being a fairly new mom, I'm no stranger to doctor's offices. And while I know how important it is for medical professionals to have access to mine and my child's medical history, as a cybersecurity professional, I also know the value of healthcare data. That's also known as personal healthcare information, or PHI. And that has value to cyber criminals. PHI is one of the most valuable things that fraudsters can steal in terms of data that belongs to actual people. One reason that healthcare data is so valuable is that it's durable, which means that much of it cannot be changed. And it's also very rich in information, and therefore can allow a criminal to do many things with it. From identity theft to insurance fraud, the playing field is really vast.
Exactly, Limor. You know, we think about how frustrating it is when our credit card numbers are stolen or if a password's stolen, because your credit card number, you have to go back into your auto pay and change it, or your password, you know, you have to go into different accounts. Hopefully you have different passwords on each account, but if you don't, you have to change multiple passwords and accounts. And you contrast that with the ease of changing a password, as frustrating as it is, you contrast that with trying to change your real birth date. And as much as some of us may want a different birth date, the reality is there's only one, just like there's only one blood type for us.
Yeah, and there sure can be some big upsides for cyber criminals that can steal that health data that we have. But there's also a number of things that we could take, or steps we could take rather, to help protect our own PHI. And this is why we're really excited to have a guest today that is here to help us break it all down. He happens to be our former manager at IBM Security, and he's the current CEO of Synergistic. That's a company that specializes in helping the healthcare sector to be secure and compliant. He is Mr. Caleb Barlow. Caleb, thank you so much for being here. The healthcare sector.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're really happy. The healthcare sector is going through literal hell these days with the raging global pandemic on their hands. And the organizations in this domain are also facing unprecedented onslaught on their networks by cyber criminals, you know, from stealing their data to breaking them with ransomware. Can you tell us what you're seeing from your vantage point?
Well, I think to fully understand this, Limor, you have to step back even before the pandemic and understand what was going on in healthcare, right? So in 2019, you had an environment where if you went to the doctor's office, if you went to the hospital, and this is a US statistic, you know, you had anywhere from a 12 to a 14% chance that in that calendar year alone, your data was going to be stolen. Wow. Now think about that, right? If I told you you had a 12% chance when you went to the hospital of coming home with a MRSA infection, you probably wouldn't go to the hospital, right?
That's crazy.
But why is this? Well, first of all, not only is healthcare targeted often, and it was before the pandemic, but the other challenge we have is that 66%, and again, this is a US statistic, but I think this is probably the case worldwide, 66% of US hospitals do not meet minimum cybersecurity standards if you evaluated them on a NIST framework, right? So, you know, if you went out, did a basic NIST assessment, 66% of America's hospitals would fall on average below a 3, right? So you have this enormous technical debt that hasn't been paid yet to catch up to where the bad guys are. and you have a highly targeted industry. Now, that's all before the pandemic. Well, now we bring in a situation where hospitals are literally in crisis mode. They take all of their back office staff and either furlough them or send them to work from home. So now they've got remote workers when they were never designed to have that set up. In addition to that, their finances start to plummet because elective procedures are put on hold. You know, people stop going to the doctor unless it's really urgent. So you have a financial crisis. At the same time, you have a healthcare crisis. At the same time, we're already weak on security, and there's even more incentive to kind of put it off to the side. So that was the setup when we were coming into February, March. But I think what people also don't realize is the bad guys were going through their own pandemic. It isn't like, you know, wherever they live in the world, they were also being quarantined. They had to figure out also how to work from home. So, but also their traditional targets, airlines, travel and tourism, you know, restaurants, traditional corporations kind of, you know, in the industry, all those things saw a pullback and they were less lucrative. Like it wasn't like if you were a bad guy, you were going to go target a hotel chain. There's nobody staying there. There's no money there at the moment. So you too have to change your target. So that was kind of the setup going into this. And it only got worse as the pandemic unfolded.
That's a really good point, Caleb. I hadn't thought about, of course, the criminals are going through quarantine too. And they do have to pivot who they're going after to those sectors that are not being as negatively impacted as well, things like.
If you're a bad guy, you got to set yourself up to work from home. And that's not trivial, especially if you don't want your home address revealed, right?
Yeah.
But what came out of this, and this is what is so fascinating, is a change in adversarial intent. So, you know, we have to always think of the bad guy in any equation, right? What's their motivation? Because there's a human on the other side of all of these attacks. Well, that human historically would go after healthcare mainly just for money, right? They would go after healthcare, and money was typically derived by selling medical records. You go in, you steal some data, you sell it on the dark web. And, you know, over 2019, they had started to migrate towards ransomware. But generally speaking, the ransomware was relatively benign. You go in, you lock up something in a system, you demand a ransom. And of course, most of healthcare had insured themselves against this. So if they had put the risk onto somebody else in the form of cyber insurance, they pay the ransom, they get access to the data. And, you know, I don't mean to diminish this, but generally speaking, nobody was hurt, right? What changed in 2020 was, you know, adversarial's business model was down and their intent changed. And they started to get far more aggressive. And they started to realize, wait a second, if I lock up medical records, I can ask for more than, you know, $50,000. I can ask for millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And they're going to pay it because if they can't, if they don't, they won't be able to treat patients. So we saw a 260% increase in ransomware. And what was happening was they were targeting the electronic healthcare record systems, and they still are, with the intent of locking them up and causing a disruption in patient care. And that causes what we've all been talking about in the cybersecurity community for years, a kinetic impact. You're actually impacting people's lives. And we've even seen reports, I don't know if they're verified or not, of people even dying due to ransomware. But the impact is absolutely devastating. And we saw this culminate where right around the time of the election, so in early November, we saw a massive attack that took down more than a dozen US hospitals, probably the most public example of which is what happened in the University of Vermont system, where, I mean, they're down. They can't see patients, at least not as easily. They're diverting patients out of their ER. They even called in the National Guard to help them restore their systems. And, you know, the latest news reports that this is costing more than $60 million just in restoral costs, let alone you have, you know, thousands of patients that have been impacted. And it's not just, you know, people that show up in an emergency room. It's the things you didn't think about, like the oncology patient or the patient that needs imaging. Well, if the medical record systems don't work, you can't use your imaging systems because they don't operate without access to the EHR.
Right. It's absolutely been crazy. And we have been seeing the demands go really high. High as $40 million for a chain of hospitals in October. So these demands just going, to completely illogical places that even, large hospitals would take a very hard hit. And so we're seeing data breaches and these extortion attack on healthcare providers. They're becoming a major issue. But we're talking before about being, compliant with certain defensive measures. In the US, there's a specific act that's designed to protect healthcare data, which is known as HIPAA, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. So what are healthcare organizations doing nowadays to make sure that they're enforcing HIPAA and protecting our health data?
Well, interestingly enough, the healthcare industry, and I think this is largely true worldwide, we talk about regulated industries, but generally speaking, the regulations relative to cybersecurity are pretty light. I mean, even if you look at a very robust privacy legislation like GDPR in Europe, if you actually get underneath what does it require in terms of cybersecurity, it has a couple of platitudes in there that basically tell you to have best and world-class practices, but doesn't define what those are. HIPAA is unique in that HIPAA actually requires companies to understand their security posture on pretty much an annual basis. So you have to do a regular risk assessment. And companies like mine, that's what we do, right? Is help corporations understand that risk posture. Now, where HIPAA stops, however, is it doesn't require you do anything about it, right? So you go understand your risk posture. And let's say we find five or 10 things that are really bad. You don't have to fix them. Now, that can go sideways with you if you're breached. And there's obviously then documented evidence that you knew you had a security vulnerability and you didn't address it. You might really go sideways with a regulator or in court, depending on, what kind of lawsuits come up out of that breach. But you're not required to meet a certain security standard. That's slowly starting to change. But again, the healthcare industry is way ahead of the rest of the world in terms of this type of focus. But the bigger thing that's happening, and this isn't what we're talking about today, but I'll give your listeners a little teaser here. The bigger thing to look at is what's happening right now in US military procurement. So for the first time, you see legislation that's actually going to require a minimum security standard and require that it be assessed by a third party. And let's put it this way. If the big bureaucracy of the US government can do this and pull it off, you know that's going to proliferate throughout industry. So I think we're right at a turning point where we're about to see legislation change, where rather than having laws focus on things like breach notification, we're going to actually start to see laws that focus on a minimum set of security tools and posture that you need to have in place.
That is a great point, and you're right. As the United States government goes forward with things like DFARS for federal acquisition, what can we turn around to for consumers, right? So the federal government's doing this, which is wonderful. What can consumers do to think about the kinds of healthcare devices that we may be acquiring? So a lot of people were buying smart thermometers over when after the pandemic started, or doing things like buying smart devices to track their health over time, like Fitbit devices. What is your take, Caleb, on those devices? They do capture personal health information, right? PHI. Is it safe to use them? And what kind of acquisition plan can a consumer have for their own health devices to make sure they're secure?
Well, I mean, this is a balance, Diana, like anything else. And let's face it, right? The advantages of, if you actually use a Fitbit or an Apple Watch or whatever, and the health benefits it can provide you by paying attention to being healthy, you have to weigh those relative to the cybersecurity risk. And I think generally speaking, consumers are not putting in information that is particularly alarming, right? So if you're just your average Joe, you're tracking your runs or your rides on your bike, and you're sharing those with friends, you're probably fine. Now, that being said, you do want to recognize what information this is gathering. And probably the most alarming information is it's gathering your location of where you go and how you travel and your heartbeat and sharing that with everybody. But if you have a job where maybe where you are is particularly confidential, You know, like for example, if I'm out doing M&A activity, I know I've got lots of people trying to figure out what I'm up to, what companies I might buy. I'm going to leave the Apple Watch at home. I'm going to turn off location tracking, right? But more importantly, let's say you're a military operator, and we've actually seen this occur at a military base, going out for your run, and you know, and you're at some secret base somewhere, and you know, you're with 50 of your friends. All of a sudden, that starts showing up like a big bright light in the middle of Afghanistan of who is that? And we've actually seen that happen. So you've got to have a little bit of consciousness with that. But I think the actual more interesting thing that's happening relative to kind of devices and healthcare data is contact tracing data. So contact tracing data is now being held at public health departments, at universities, at school systems. And contact tracing data is particularly alarming in terms of what's in it. You know, we're all used to losing our, you know, our social security numbers, our healthcare information. We're used to losing location data on where we are and what locations we frequent. But what we've never had before is anything tracking who we're associated with. So if you think about what's in contact tracing data, let's say a kid at a university, you not only know their dorm room and what classes they go to, and you can probably figure out what they're studying. You know who they hang out with. You know who your girlfriend is, right? You know where you go to work, what you do. So the thing with contact tracing data, and we've only beginning to understand the implications of this, is first of all, it's being held in a lot of places you wouldn't normally think of, but also contact tracing data knows who you're associated with. And that is particularly interesting to a lot of adversaries.
It sure is. And the types of data that are being collected are definitely an issue. Some in Europe, we see that being limited. In the US, it's starting to get limited. So I'd say for our listeners, Caleb, what are your top three recommendations for people listening who want to ensure that their health data is a little more protected in these turbulent times?
Well, I think the biggest thing is to actually get access to your healthcare record and pay attention to what's in there and how that's being shared. So there's a new rule in the United States starting to roll out called the interoperability rule. And remember, you know, you broke out the definition of HIPAA, right? Portability is one of the words in there. So part of this is the expectation that as a consumer, you should be able to access your healthcare record, and all the devices and tools and applications should be able to access it as well. So it's actually forbidden for a healthcare institution to unreasonably block access to your healthcare information for not only you accessing it, but any app that you might authorize to access it. So, you know, you're all going to start to see kind of portals built up where you can go in and you can communicate with your physician, but you can also see your healthcare data and you can hook that up to your Fitbit. Pay a ton of attention to what's in that healthcare record to make sure it's accurate, but also pay a ton of attention to making sure that, you know, your Fitbit or whatever else, are you really sure you need to wire that to your actual healthcare record? So that's number one. I think the second thing is, let's say you have an elderly parent. So let's say grandma is at a nursing home and maybe she's got dementia. So the kind of the protocol that grandma's on is probably pretty complex, right? There's probably a whole series of dementia drugs. Maybe she's got diabetes, and there's a whole cocktail that's been figured out with physicians over the course of years of what makes grandma the most comfortable. Well, if that nursing home is locked up with ransomware, they lose access to that medical record. And what that also means is you lose access to all the history of the different things that were tried and kind of the experiments with different drug cocktails that was run to make grandma the most comfortable. Get access to grandma's medical record, print it out, keep a paper copy. And, you know, do that every month or two, because we've actually seen it, right? If that medical record gets locked up, no one has any idea how to treat grandma. And if you have a paper copy, boy, that's going to make her a whole lot more comfortable, a whole lot faster. And that's something nobody's thinking of right now. And I think the third thing then is just pay attention to what you're allowing apps to access. And the great thing now with both Apple and Google is they're giving you much more fine-grained control of what apps have access to what. If you don't need, if the app doesn't need your access to your location to work, then don't give it to it. Or if it only needs it when you're using the app, then set it up that way. Like, just start being very vigilant about what you give access to. And you're going to find in the end of the day, you're still going to get breached occasionally, but the odds of anybody getting access to anything that's valuable goes down significantly.
Thank you so much, Caleb. Those are great recommendations and a you know, really good reminder that we have some control over this. You know, we're not just plankton and nectin out there, you know, running around in the water without any control over ourselves, that we actually can talk to our providers, get information, understand what they have on us. And it's great to know. Thank you for sharing some of the changes and regulations that are actually empowering consumers more for their own health data.
Yeah, some doable things. This has been so much fun for the three of us to be on the same podcast together. So thank you. And to our audience, follow the podcast and get involved. You can reach out on us on Twitter. That's at @cyber_everyday. We are on LinkedIn. So if you wish to send us some questions in advance or suggest topics for our upcoming episodes, we're really open to hearing you out. And you can also email us at youreverydaycyber@securitycurve.com. And our podcast page has more details for you on what we spoke about today and some resources. So thank you everyone for tuning in and stay safe out there.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Your Everyday Cyber Podcast with Limor and Diana. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.